Hello everyone, this is Adam Zeller with AVPGalaxy.net. I'm also known on the forums by my screen name as Ridgetop. I was in LA recently and met up with my friend Mike Monahan, who is a former staffer for our site, and we both got a tour of the 40th anniversary exhibit of the Alien franchise. This was put on by the University of Southern California's School of Cinematic Arts, as well as the school's Visions and Voices initiative. Alex Ago, who's the director of programming and special projects there, was kind enough to give us a tour, and he is the voice you're primarily going to be hearing during this audio tour. Alex was very knowledgeable about everything that was on display, and he just took us around the exhibit and described to us the various creatures, to costumes, to concept artwork, and some of the documents there and the history behind them. So I hope you enjoy this audio tour. This was recorded in a public exhibit, so you may hear some background noise, and we apologize about that, but hopefully it's not too distracting. Also, you'll probably hear some of Mike and I talking back and forth with Alex a bit as well. So without further ado, I hope you enjoy this audio tour for the Alien 40th Anniversary Exhibit.
So this case here is the Dan O'Bannon collection, and everything was provided by Dan's wife, Diane. The cool thing about this for us is that Dan is a graduate from the USC film program, so there's a nice tie-in that links the origin of Alien with the School of Cinema. It was a project that he sort of started to envision when he was making Dark Star with fellow USC grad John Carpenter. And so I thought it was a great way to start the exhibit off by bringing in some things that were really at the very origins of the project. And so Diane gave us everything in here. You can see the letter here from Dan O'Bannon to Giger is a very early solicitation of artwork and design concepts that he was trying to get Giger to put together something that would resemble the creatures that he was imagining in its various, in their various forms throughout the movie. So here we have an original sketch by Dan O'Bannon with the facehugger, plus the facehugger, these are photocopies, but this, the facehugger escaping the egg, and then the chestburster coming out. And it's funny because in the letter itself, it says, these are just crude sketches, with an understanding that you won't copy any of these designs, but will create original designs of your own. So the designs themselves, I think, are really charming because they're sort of cute.
Yeah.
But you can obviously see the original ideas and sort of some of the things that Dan had in mind when he was writing the first draft of the screenplay. He had commissioned a variety of artists to put together early concept art, and that's something that he had some experience with, having seen what Hodorowski was doing on Dune, which brought Giger to his attention in the first place. So he went out to a few people like Ron Cobb and Chris Foss, Mobius, and Giger to sort of come up with a concept art portfolio of things that would help to actually bring to life what was written on the page. So within here, you also see some early designs by Ron Cobb, who was very detailed in trying to match the design of what was then the Leviathan, eventually the Nostromo, how it would match the interior as a functioning ship. And a lot of Ron Cobb's designs have this relationship between concept and functionality. And then here we see a page. Unfortunately, I don't know exactly which is which, but a page that is Ron Cobb, which I'm going to guess is that one, and a page which is Chris Foss, which are obviously storyboards of directly taken out of the script, which are in this larger folio, the first draft storyboard for special photographic effects. There was also supposed to be sort of a pyramid structure on the planet. There isn't a larger version of that in here, so I just decided to include this in here, since it does, again, represent the earliest concepts that Dan and Giger worked on together. And you'll see when we look at the Giger artwork on the wall that there is a certain progression in the artwork that's dated, and you can actually see in the earliest ones it says Dan O'Bannon's Alien.
That was because O'Bannon commissioned Giger himself, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Before Fox officially.
Exactly. This Polaroid, very unique, is Giger wearing a facehugger. I know.
Are these the actual sketches by O'Bannon?
I mean, these are photocopies of the actual sketches, yeah. And then this is an actual original.
Yeah, I recognize these because I just saw a memory at Sundance.
Yeah.
I got to interview the director right after that.
I can't wait to see it.
It was really cool. It was definitely more focused on O'Bannon and his early concepts for the film. But it was kind of like a hybrid of that with a film essay, just kind of exploration of like what Alien means and stuff.
Fantastic. Like, so. Fantastic. I can't wait to see it. On this wall, there's a collection of different pieces by some of the artists that O'Bannon had commissioned. In the middle, the very colorful ones are from Chris Foss. And then up at the top are two Ron Cobb designs, early designs for the Alien. On the bottom are three character designs by Mobius. That represents the bulk of the non-Giger concept art. There's one more Mobius piece down there, but I really thought it would be fun to just have one wall be very colorful and have all of these crazy designs that show you all the different ideas. For instance, the Nostromo pulling this refinery on an asteroid, which was, you know, originally one of the concepts for what this refinery would be that they're tugging along through space. This sign is really dedicated to the first film. We'll come back to that in a second. But here's just some behind-the-scenes photos, some set stills, some candid, some publicity shots from the set. And in this case, there are a variety of fairly unusual documents that come directly out of the Ridley Scott Archive that USC owns. The Ridley Scott Archive was donated to the School of Cinematic Arts about 3 years ago, two years ago. It contains mostly documents, so there's no 3D objects in there, but it's a good look into a lot of the things that went into the making of the film, the casting of the film, the commissioning of various things with Giger and Carlo Rambaldi for the design of the creature head, and then of course things like the reception of the film, and you know, all sorts of interesting production details, production schedules, sketches, Ridley Graham storyboards, things like that. So in here you have some production design sketches and a photo that shows some of the actual set as it was coming to life. This is an early treatment for the title cards. So you can kind of see a little bit of, you know, how that's determined or negotiated with handwritten notes. There is a lot in the Ridley Archive about the casting process. I chose what I thought were a little bit more personalized pieces from there that have handwritten notes or that might have some really interesting alternate casting ideas in there, but that also reference some of the people that are actually in the film. So you can see here, as late as March 22nd, 1978, they had actually gone out to Tom Skerritt, who had originally turned them down. And you can see that there's a really interesting list of people for Dallas on that list: Anthony Hopkins, Tommy Lee Jones, Christopher Lloyd, Sam Elliott, Harrison Ford, Martin Sheen. And in the files there's actual headshots from the people that came in for casting. I didn't find Harrison Ford or Sam Elliott, but I did find a headshot for Christopher Lloyd. And I found a headshot actually submitted for Yaphet Kotto, which is why I put that one in there. And, you know, you can see a few things, for instance, that, you know, Yaphet Kotto was his favorite for Parker. It's interesting, you know, you see Harry Dean Stanton in there, but obviously he's cast, but not that role. This is already a little bit later in the game as he's really starting to narrow things down. The original lists don't bear any resemblance to who was actually cast in the film. So you can see a little bit of that on this handwritten one where it's got names like Teresa Russell and Sybil Shepherd for Ripley, Steve Railsback for Ash, Joe Pantoliano for Brett. But Yaphet Kotto was obviously an early favorite for Parker.
Yeah, no other choice there.
Here's an alternate casting resume. There are several of these in the archive. and I just didn't have the space to put more of them. But basically, there's, you know, three or four of these submitted photos with referencing, you know, the owner. I mean, at first, when I saw on the catalog listing that there were cat resumes, I thought it was going to be amazing, like finding out like where they were trained and what other films they were in. But it's actually mostly just like this, kind of just photos. This letter is a gem. It's from the associate producer to a Mr. Needham, who I don't know who that is, saying, having just completed the dub of Alien, I can confirm that we have not used any part of your rather unique serval wildcat recordings in our film. here we have a set candid of Ridley's kids who had to wear the spacesuits. When the Nostromo lands, there's a giant leg that descends and lands on the planet. And to give a sense of scale, they felt that the adult actors were too big. So because it's a wide shot and you don't see their faces, he decided to put his kids in the shot instead, which basically doubles the scale of the piece of the ship. Here's a screen-worn Nostromo baseball cap that Harry Dean Stanton wears in the film, and an actual alien hand used in the movie, which has a little plaque there to sort of authenticate it. And of course, there's a couple of photos in the back that kind of show the relationship, like him wearing the hat, the hand in frame, Giger working on the hand. And then these letters over here are very interesting because, unfortunately, given space, the space that we have, it's kind of hard to really emphasize what's being discussed in these letters. But because they were shooting in England and Sigourney Weaver and Harry Dean Stanton were Americans, there's more Americans than just the two of them, but these letters really focus on, you know, why he needed to cast those two actors in particular. And if you remember, Sigourney Weaver at the time had not had any kind of major film roles. So these letters are particularly focusing on why Ridley wants Sigourney for this role and why they need to hire her. So you can look through those. And then I've also included some of Ridley's notes on basically the character, the qualities of the characters that he wanted to see out of Ripley and Dallas. So there's some really interesting insight into how he viewed the characters in this. Unfortunately, some of the stuff in the Ridley archive are photocopies, and they're not always done very well. So I took the photocopies and made photocopies of those and then mounted them so that we could have some storyboards that are just famous Ridley grams where he's doing the drawings himself and putting notes as to, you know, sort of camera movement and what's supposed to happen in the shot.
Cats and cats.
Yeah. It's exceptional. It's just, I mean, that middle one is just a gem.
Yeah. the look on his face is great.
So here we have the Death of Cain sequence, which there's also a variety of photos here that sort of show you what it looked like on set. And then on the other side is the final sequence with Ripley and the alien as they're, in the final battle where she ejects it into space. And this one has a little bit more interesting detail in terms of the shots and the movements and, you know, sort of what's supposed to happen, because those are fairly complicated. So not quite as adorable as the chest burster sequence there. Here, you know, you've got some set candids of actually filming the chest burster sequence. And then I'll admittedly cheated and put a photo of Ridley with this, like, rain tarp on, because this is actually in the sequence where Harry Dean Stanton's character is meets his end in that very, like, misty chain room. I know there's a name for it, the claw room, but I thought it was just a good juxtaposition with the chest burster, because you can see him, you know, John Hurt underneath the table, basically covered in blood from having to film this sequence a couple of times. In here, it's mostly a case dedicated to the design of the alien head. And you can see in the background, in a couple of photos, Carlo Rambaldi, who's doing the sculpting of the head based on the Giger designs. And you can see in his original sketches, which have a lot of his own notes in Italian, the mechanical functioning of, like, the inner workings of the head. Which behind you, you'll see a mechanical torso from Alien Covenant, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, there are certain things that the head has to accomplish that they can do practically. So there are certain mechanics that you get a window into through his designs. And then the documentation here talks about various things that the head is supposed to accomplish, what the various special effects shots are supposed to be, what Carlo himself was contracted to do. And it starts off first with this, only unfortunately the first page of a longer list of alien cycle creature effects, and you can see that they refer to the alien as the little rascal, which specifically refers to the full-grown thing, which you would see on the second page of it. But here, you know, it goes from egg to facehugger, and then eventually chestburster, and then little rascal. And then this one is specifically about, you know, the various things communicated to Carlo about, you know, coming up with a cost, production scheduling, what the head is supposed to do, what Carlo himself is responsible for. And then here you get a more detailed look at what they expected the facial movements to be on the alien. And then over here is just a quick production schedule of the specifically relating back to the head and the suit for the xenomorph. And you can see Rambaldi's section on there. And then, you know, what's mechanized and what's not mechanized. But then what's really cool is you also have a column here for Balaji Badejo, who actually played the alien. And this is a nod to the stuntman who played the alien in the scenes where Balaji himself was not in the costume. So that's really on set with the stuntman in the suit. Just sort of flavor, putting a little flavor in the background here so that it didn't look too empty. I used a few things from the archive that you can kind of get glimpses of, such as a list of films that really put together for the art department that he wanted people to see, just sort of like for inspiration. So you've got things like Forbidden Planet, the original Westworld.
The Cylinder.
Yeah, Dr. Strangelove, Ralph Bakshi's Wizards. What is this down here? Rolling Thunder. And then over here is just a page of the script where, you know, one of the producers is kind of making notes for pieces of the script that maybe Dan and co-writer Ron Shusett needed to go back over. Here we transition over to Aliens. And because the exhibit is really meant to be heavily focused on the original film, since it's its 40th anniversary, the other three films in the original quadrilogy are here in pieces, but the key thing was to look at the origins of the franchise and then how it evolved. So you've got some publicity stills of the various actors from Aliens, along with some set candids. And then over here is another series of concept artwork that was done specifically for Aliens, including some of the most beloved additions to the franchise, the Power Loader and the Queen Alien. And then also, of course, the weapons in Aliens are pretty cool. So we wanted to get in some representation of that. And then you can see more sort of set photography of Jim Cameron on the set, working with Sigourney Weaver, with Lance Henriksen, with Carrie Henn. We actually do have, in this case, an original screen-used facehugger from Aliens. And this is the only piece that Fox was so concerned about that they had to come in themselves to install it.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently it's fragile when you move it, and it's amazing. So it's sort of, they were very hands-on with that one. Just to sort of fill in the case a little bit, we added some original magazine covers from when the original Alien was released, and then a copy of the script. We've got a costume from Alien Resurrection, which is my favorite Ripley costume. And then I just kind of cheated a little bit here, but I went using leather as the motif. I've got
it's like the hidden thermos weapon
that has that has the blaster in it from Resurrection, and in the back is a leather bag from Alien 3. Over here is the Alien 3 medical scan where she discovers that she's carrying the alien inside of her. You can even tell it's a queen alien sort of by the spikes in the back of its head. And of course, you couldn't put that on screen the way it is. No. So if you look at that film,
it's shot
and then it's presented in SD on like a television, and it's got static and stuff. So they really down-res it a lot to mask it. But it does have a hole in the back. So presumably someone was operating it to make some movement inside the lungs. I don't quite remember if the alien itself moves, but I think that was probably to pump air into the lungs.
Just a little bit of a shifts a little bit in the frame.
I'll have to show that to ADI tomorrow and see if they recognize it. Yeah. That was puppeteered by them.
Down here, we have a couple things that come from Covenant, which are particularly cool. from David's cabinet of curiosities, where he's experimenting with various iterations of the alien creature that he's designing. Of course, an egg from the movie. In the back are two of the pieces that we got from the Yeager Estate on loan. Obviously, very impressive designs. And you can see that there's even written on them, Alien, H.R. Giger. They're signed by him. And these are obviously reproductions that he signed. I'm sure you guys don't need me to explain the backstory of how they discovered the design for the alien and then adapted it for the movie. But here you actually get... Oh, they are dated, actually. So that one is a piece from 1978. They're both pieces from 1978. The three panels here are all dedicated to Giger, except for the sides. So you can see a little bit of the evolution of some of the things that he was working on. That's dated 1977, when he's still referring to it as O'Bannon's alien. And then by 1978, you get a little bit closer to the final design as the artwork is sort of getting refined. I also put some other things from his work up here just to give you a general aesthetic of what he was already, creating that inspired the look of the set design. And then this is obviously a cool piece because it's also got the 20th Century Fox logo in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In this case, are a variety of props, mostly weapons, that span several different films. The rocket comes from Aliens. The Bible comes from Resurrection. These guns come from Resurrection. And this comes from Covenant. This Lord flamethrower, the hands, Dr. Shaw's hands in Prometheus, along with her dog tags. Over here are just some set candidates with David Fincher and Sigourney and Charles Dutton from the production of Alien 3. And here's another set, a little bit more kind of about Giger, him working with Rambaldi in the studio. So there's a sculptor working on the Space Jockey set, looking, trying to sort of compare the designs that Giger had come up with the sculptures that were making it. Here are two more pieces from the original commissioned work from Dan O'Bannon, and very early facehugger designs that there's another piece over there too that is a little bit more rendered. And then this was infamously an original design for the chest burster that Ridley Scott thought looked a little bit too much like a plucked chicken. So they had to go back to the drawing board on that. And then, more artwork from his Necronom that had inspired the alien design in the first place. And Giger's work tends to be kind of erotic sometimes, which we'll see especially in the next piece. But the sort of fusing of mechanical elements with organic ones to create these weird shapes, like these tubes that come out of the back of the alien, which of course was then instrumental in how they designed the original alien, where they're using tubes and things, motorcycle parts, etc., to create the alien's look, which eventually they move away from that as they have more money and they sort of step up the creature effects. This is my favorite case just because it's all the various oddities, mostly from Covenant and Resurrection. These, unfortunately, hard to kind of actually pinpoint in the movie where they show up. But presumably somewhere in that awful chamber of clones that Ripley destroys, they're somewhere in there. But the rest, that's also from Resurrection. But the rest come from Covenant, including this facehugger that you can see was operated. It's on wheels underneath, so it was.
I can't remember. I know they used some practical stuff on Covenant just for lighting reference that was later replaced with CG, but I'm not sure if there was a practical facehugger that was left in the film. I know it was used on set.
This is a mechanical torso from Covenant. And it actually came bolted to a dolly So you could see that someone was operating it underneath. There's all these wires that come out of it. Even though I've never turned it on, I couldn't tell you how it works, but unfortunately it's a little bit damaged, but the plus side to that is it actually allows you to see inside a little bit as to sort of what it's meant to control. So you can see how it connects to the inner jaw. This is just a toy, a NECA toy. This guy is a model that was used on Alien 3 that came about because the concept of the alien in the third film was that the embryo would take on certain DNA characteristics of the host. So if in the first two films the alien was consistently gestating inside of a human being, it would be bipedal. By the time you get to Alien 3, the alien gestates inside of a dog, so you wind up having something that can move on all four legs. So this little model was meant to just basically give various designers on the film a sense of the movement of the creature and sort of what it would look like. And notice that it doesn't have the tube sticking out of the back.
I think the museum still sells those little Bambi bursters.
They do. So this is another piece that we got from the Giger estate. And beautiful. I mean, I would buy it if I could afford it.
Yeah, they're like $9,000 or something.
I think he might be selling the bronze ones for $5,000.
Oh, yeah.
That's still slightly out of my league. This is Tennessee's spacesuit from Covenant. And it's very detailed. You can tell that Ridley put a lot of emphasis on the quality of the costume design. And the thing that everyone seems to really enjoy is this GoPro camera. It's actually branded GoPro, which you can see on the front of it.
I mean, I like that they even have that gold. You wouldn't even see that on camera.
It's just so, so well done. Unfortunately, mannequins are very hard to work with, and I can't get it to totally stand upright.
Especially with like heavy spacesuits and stuff. Yeah.
And then you've got a model for the Neomorph head in Covenant, and then this is an engineer helmet. And that's just a photo of Tennessee in your costume. Over here, you have another set of costume that Tennessee wears, if it can even be called a costume. Obviously, another exquisitely designed piece from Covenant, and you can see him actually inside of it and wearing it on set. Oh, and of course, we have an engineer statue from Prometheus. It's remarkably lightweight.
It's like, and these were on set?
I could lift this with one hand.
It's probably like carved foam, I would imagine.
Exactly, yeah. And there are a couple of these over at Fox. But I'm excited that we have it. But you can see, especially over here, when you look at it a little closely, that foam was just sort of eaten away at.
It's really cool, though, just seeing how big it was.
Yeah. Along the top, I have posters from from all six films. As I mentioned, we, for a variety of reasons, only focused on the non-Predator movies, just because the idea was to really focus on the first film as much as possible. So we had to sort of make some decisions, which is also why you don't see a lot of other stuff from Covenant and Prometheus, because we knew that we were going to have props and costumes from those films, so we could sort of focus more on the photography and concept designs from the first four films, since I didn't have as much stuff to work with for those. Here you have a David costume from Prometheus, along with his neurovisor that he uses to read dreams, and his flute from Covenant, and the engineer from Prometheus, along with the ampule that contains that genetic material accelerator that the engineers... Yeah, exactly.
I didn't know that's what it's called.
And that's David's sketchbook, right?
Sketchbook, and there's nothing inside of it, unfortunately. I was, you know, I have like the beautiful sketchbook thing that they published, and I feel like I need to do something to sort of show off what was supposed to be inside of that, but it's unfortunately just blank, empty pages. And then the embryos from the amazing team over at Sideshow worked directly with Lightstorm to do this incredible maquette of the Queen Alien from Aliens, and it's incredibly detailed. They have a little 5-minute documentary you might have seen about it. If you haven't, I highly recommend you look at it, because they're going back to the original film and really you know, making it as authentic as possible. And then back here, I don't quite remember the whole history of this piece, the Alien Warrior, but
I will point out Jonesy the cat in the ground.
Yeah.
I think it's amazing.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
That's actually part of a new line by Sideshow called Alien, it's either like Alien Legends or Alien Mythos or something, where they're just kind of doing their own weird designs that weren't part of the film.
Like triple jointed.
Yeah, he has like four arms and two legs, and his legs are like really long. That's so cool.
Over here I have a case dedicated to merchandise, and there are some real treasures in here. This little Lego man with the facehugger on top of it is my favorite piece. And this thing connected to the Fox sort of like Japanese manga kind of Alien and Jonesy books that they put out has an alien walking the xenomorph walking the facehugger, which I think is adorable. This all comes from one person who actually is on staff here, which is great because
maybe for me, I sold a lot of my pieces recently.
Oh,
a lot of these are.
Nice. That'd
be funny.
He really came in and saved the day, because for the longest time I was talking to some people at NECA about bringing in some of their collection, and then over Christmas and New Year I just stopped hearing back from them altogether. And I thought, you know, I had done a similar exhibit last year on the 50th anniversary of Planet of the Apes. Uh-huh. And I really wanted to have a whole cabinet of curiosities that were like ephemera and merchandise and toys and stuff, which at the time was even more important to that fan base because they didn't have the ability to rewatch the films that often. You know, there was a long stretch right between the end of production on Battle for the Planet of the Apes and the making of the Tim Burton film. So comics and toys and stuff like that, and Super 8 reels and stuff like that really kept the fans engaged. And so I thought, let's do it with Alien. I mean, I know that there's a million different things that people have licensed the rights to just like go ahead and make their own products. And my friend who's a projectionist here happened to just have an enormous collection. There's obviously we're limited by the height of the case, but he's got plenty of other stuff too that I couldn't fit in there, which is sort of why I put it too, to just get a sense of the sizes of things.
This is honestly like one of my all-time favorites, the Kotobukiya Big Chap. It's probably the most screen accurate one I've ever seen.
What else do we have here? These are stills from Alien Resurrection, some cast photos, that you can see a little bit of the kind of evolution of the alien as it gets after the queen mates with Ripley late in the movie. This is concept art from Alien 3, and you can see some of the original designs for the planet. Right, exactly. When there was a much higher emphasis on, you know, this sort of was the original concept was going to be like a planet made out of wood, and that it was going to be all like a monastery. But it just gives you a sense of alternate visions for the film. And then you've got some of Jean-Pierre Genet's storyboards from Resurrection and some concept art in the back.
Yeah, it's just fantastic.
Thank you.
Nice job. Amazing, yeah.
Hey everyone, this is Adam again. Hope you enjoyed listening to the tour that Alex gave to Mike and I. I highly recommend a visit to the exhibit yourselves, it's well worth it. But if you can't make it, feel free to check out our full article, which includes photos, video, and an interview that I conducted with Alex. Again, thank you for listening.